You said I wouldn't have to shoot.
I changed the plan.
But I told you I can't fire a rifle.
Yes, you can. You just pull the trigger. It's easy. Don't worry about aiming or anything. All I want is the sound and the flash.
Then what?
Then you scoot down to the 7 and watch. I'm going to be busy shooting. I need you to ID exactly who I'm shooting at.
This isn't right.
It isn't wrong, either.
You think?
You ever seen Clay Allison's grave? She rolled her eyes.
You need to read the history books, Reacher. Clay Allison was a total psychopath. He once killed a guy bunking with him just because he snored. He was an amoral maniac, plain and simple. Nothing too noble about that.
Reacher shrugged. Well, we can't back out now.
Two wrongs don't make a right, you know.
It's a choice, Alice. Either we ambush them or get ambushed by them. She shook her head.
Great,
she said. He said nothing.
It's dark. How will I see anything?
I'll take care of that.
How will I know when to fire?
You'll know. He pulled the jeep close to the edge of the limestone table and stopped, opened the tailgate and took out the first rifle, checked his bearings, and ran to the fractured rock lip and laid the gun on the ground with the butt hanging over the edge and the barrel pointing at the emptiness 20 feet in front of the distant VW. He leaned down and racked the lever. It moved precisely with a sweet, metallic slick-slick. A fine weapon. It's ready to fire, he said, and this is the 8 o'clock spot. Stay down below the lip, fire the gun, and then move to the 7. Crouch low all the way, and then watch, real careful. They might fire in your direction, but I guarantee they'll miss, okay? She said nothing. I promise. Don't worry about it.
Are you sure?
Superman couldn't hit anything with a handgun in the dark at this distance.
They might get lucky.
No, Alice, tonight they're not going to get lucky. Believe me.
But when do I fire?
Fire when ready. He watched her hide below the lip of the rock, an arm's length from her rifle. Good luck, he said. I'll see you later.
Great,
she said again. He climbed back into the jeep and hustled it straight across the mesa to the 4 o'clock position, spun the wheel and reversed the car and backed it straight off the rock. It bumped down 2 feet and came to a shuddering stop in the undergrowth. He killed the engine and the lights, took the fourth rifle and propped it upright against the passenger door, carried the second and third with him, and climbed back onto the ledge and ran in the open to what he estimated was the 2 o'clock spot. Laid the third rifle carefully on the lip of the rock and ran the rest of the way to the parked VW. Ducked inside and unscrewed the dome light, eased the driver's door back to 3 inches from closed and left it. Measured 20 feet clockwise and laid the second rifle on the ground on the rim of the ledge somewhere between the 12 and the 1. 12:30 maybe. No, about 12:17, to be pedantic, he thought. Then he crawled back and lay face down on the ground, tied up against the VW, with his right shoulder tucked under the little running board, and the right side of his face pressed against the sidewall of the front tire. He was breathing deeply. The tire smelled like rubber. His left shoulder was out in the weather. Big, ponderous raindrops hit it at infrequent intervals. He hitched in closer and settled down to wait. 8 minutes, perhaps, he thought. Maybe 9. It was 11 minutes. They were a little slower than he expected. He saw a flash in the north and at first thought it was lightning, but then it happened again, and he saw it was headlight beams bouncing across rough terrain and catching the low gray cloud overhead. A vehicle was pitching and rolling its way through the darkness. It was heading his way, which he knew it would, because the landscape gave it no other choice but to stay on the track. Its lights flared and died as the nose rose and fell. He was sweating. The air around him was hotter than ever. He could feel pressure and electricity in the sky above. The raindrops were falling harder and a little faster. It felt like a fuse was burning and the storm was set to explode. Not yet, he thought. Please give me 5 minutes more. 30 seconds later, he could hear an engine, a gasoline engine, running hard, 8 cylinders. The sound rose and fell as the driven wheels gripped the dirt and then bounced and lost traction. Hard suspension, he thought. Load-carrying suspension. Bobby's pickup, probably, the one he used to hunt the armadillo. He tucked himself tighter against the underside of the VW. The engine noise grew louder. It rose and fell. The lights bounced and swerved. They lit the northern horizon with a dull glow. Then they were near enough to make out as separate twin beams spearing through the mesquite. They threw harsh shadows and flicked left and right as the vehicle turned. Then the truck burst into sight. It bounced up onto the mesa, traveling fast. The engine screamed like all four wheels were off the ground. The headlights flared high and then dipped low as it crashed back to earth. It landed slightly off course, and the lights swept the perimeter for a second before they straightened ahead. It accelerated on the flatter terrain. The engine was loud. It came on and on, straight at him, faster and faster, 40 miles an hour, 50, 70 yards away, 50, 40. It came straight at him until the bouncing headlights washed over the stationary VW directly ahead of it. The yellow paint above Reacher's shoulder glowed impossibly bright. Then the truck jammed to a panic stop. All four wheels locked hard on the limestone grit, and there was a howl of rubber, and the truck slewed slightly left and came to rest facing 11 o'clock, maybe 30 yards in front of him. The far edge of the headlight beams washed over him. He forced himself tighter under the VW. He could smell the raindrops in the dust. Nothing happened for a second. Then the pickup driver killed his lights. They faded to weak orange filaments and died to nothing, and the total darkness came back. The insects went silent, no sound at all beyond the truck engine idling against the brake. Reacher thought, did they see me? Nothing happened. Now, Alice, Reacher thought. Nothing happened. Shoot, Alice, he thought. Shoot now, for God's sake. Nothing happened. Shoot the damn gun, Alice, just pull the damn trigger. He closed his eyes and paused another whole endless second and braced himself to launch outward anyway. Opened his eyes and took a breath and started moving. Then Alice fired. There was a monstrous muzzle flash easily 10 feet long, far away to his right, and the buzzing whine of a supersonic bullet high in the air, and a split second later an enormous barking crash clapped across the landscape. He rolled out from under the VW and reached in through the driver's door and flicked the headlights on, jumped backward into the mesquite and kept rolling and came up into a low crouch 6 feet away to see the pickup caught perfectly in the cone of bright light. Three people in it, a driver in the cab, two figures crouching in the load bed holding the roll bar one-handed. All three of them, with their heads turned abruptly on their shoulders, rigid and frozen and staring backward at the spot Alice had fired from. They were immobile a split second longer, and then they reacted. The driver flicked his own lights back on. The pickup and the VW glared at each other like it was a contest. Reacher was dazzled by the light, but he saw the figures in the load bed were wearing caps and blue jackets. One figure was smaller than the other. A woman, he thought. He fixed her position carefully in his mind. Shoot the women first. That was the standard counter-terrorist doctrine. The experts figured they were more fanatical. And suddenly he knew she was the shooter. She had to be. Small hands, neat fingers. Carmen's Lorcan could have been built for her. She was crouched low alongside her partner on his left. They both had handguns. They both stared sideways a half second longer and then snapped forward into the glare and leaned on the pickup's roof and started shooting at the VW's lights. Their caps said FBI on the front. He froze. What the hell? Then he relaxed. Beautiful. Fake apparel, fake ID, a tricked-up Crown Vic. They just went to Alice's place in it, and that's how they stopped Al Eugene on Friday. They were shooting continuously. He heard the flat, dull thumps of powerful 9mm pistols firing fast. He heard spent shells clattering out onto the pickup's roof. He saw the VW's windshield explode and heard bullets punching through sheet metal and the tinkling of glass, and then the VW's lights were gone and he could see nothing at all behind the dazzle of the pickup's own lights. He sensed the pistols turning back to where they had Alice's firing position fixed in their memories. He saw tiny, oblique muzzle flashes and heard bullets whining away from him. The left-hand gun stopped. The woman, reloading already. Only 13 shots, his subconscious mind told him. Has to be a Sig Sauer P-228 or a Browning High Power. He crawled forward to the rim of the mesa and tracked 15 feet left and found the rifle he had placed at 12-17. Winchester number 2, full of Bobby Greer's handloads. He fired without aiming, and the recoil almost knocked him off his knees. A tremendous flame leapt out of the muzzle. It was like the strobe on a camera. He had no idea where the bullet went. He racked the lever, slick, slick, and hustled right toward the wrecked VW, fired again. Two huge, visible flashes moving progressively counterclockwise. From the pickup's vantage point, it would look like a person traversing right to left. A smart shooter would fire ahead of the last flash and hope to hit the moving target. Deflection shooting. They went for it. He heard bullets whining off the rock near the car, heard one hit it. But by then, he was on the move in the opposite direction, clockwise again. He dropped the rifle and bent low and ran for the next one. It was there at 2 o'clock. The third Winchester, the one with the sequenced load. The first shot was a factory bullet, worth some care. He steadied himself on the lip of the ledge and aimed into the blackness 8 feet behind the pickup's headlights and 4 feet above them. Fired once. Now they think there are 3 riflemen out here, one behind them on the left, 2 ahead on the right. There was ringing in his ears, and he couldn't see where his bullet went, but he heard the woman's voice shout a faint command, and the pickup's headlights promptly died. He fired again at the same spot with the next shell, which was a hand load. The gout of flame spat out and lit up the mesa, and he jinked 5 feet right, tracked the frozen visual target in his mind, and fired the next. The second factory bullet, neat and straight and true. He heard a sharp scream, danced 1 pace to his right, and fired the next hand load. The muzzle flash showed him a body falling head first out of the pickup bed. It was caught entirely motionless in midair. One down, but the wrong one. It was too big. It was the man. Factory round next. He concentrated hard and aimed again, slightly left of the place the guy had fallen from. Racked the lever. It moved 1/4 inch and jammed solid on the worn cartridge case from the last hand load. Then 2 things happened. First, the pickup moved. It lurched forward and peeled away fast in a tight, desperate circle and headed back north, the way it had come. Then a handgun started firing close to the VW. The woman was out of the truck. She was on foot in the dark. She was firing fast, a hail of bullets. They were missing him by 3 or 4 feet. The truck raced away, its lights flicked on again. He tracked them in the corner of his eye. They jerked and bounced and swerved and grew smaller, then they disappeared off the end of the mesa. The truck just thumped down off the edge of the rock table and hurtled back toward the red house. Its noise faded to nothing, and its lights dimmed to a distant glow moving on the far black horizon. The handgun stopped firing, reloading again. There was sudden total silence, total darkness. A second later, the insect chant swam back into focus. It sounded softer than usual, less frantic.
This is the end of Side 1. This program is continued on Side 2 of this cassette.
There was sudden total silence, total darkness. A second later, the insect chant swam back into focus. It sounded softer than usual, less frantic. He realized the rain had changed. The heavy drops had stopped, and in their place was an insistent patter of drizzle. He held his hand palm up and felt it building. It grew perceptibly harder and harder within seconds, like he was standing in a shower stall, and an unseen hand was opening the faucet wider and wider. He wiped water off his forehead to keep it out of his eyes, and laid the jammed rifle quietly in the dust. The dust was already wet under his fingers. It was turning to mud. He moved left, tracking back toward the hidden jeep. It was maybe 40 yards away. The rain got harder. It built and built like there was going to be no limit to its power. It hissed and roared on the mesquite bushes all around him. Good news and bad news. The good news was it took making noise out of the equation. He wouldn't have backed himself to move as quietly as the woman could, not through desert vegetation at night. A frame 6'5" in height and 250 pounds in weight was good for a lot of things, but not for silent progress through unseen thorny plants. The noise of the rain would help him more than her. That was the good news. The bad news was visibility was soon going to be worse than zero. They could bump into each other back to back before either of them knew the other was there. So a lever-action repeater was not going to be the weapon of choice. Too slow for a snapshot, too cumbersome to maneuver. And a Winchester throws the spent shell out of the top, not out of the side. which means in a heavy rainstorm, it can let water in through the ejection port. And this was going to be a heavy rainstorm. He could sense it. It was going to try to compensate for 10 years of drought in a single night. He made it back to the Jeep at the 4 o'clock position, found the fourth rifle propped against its door, full of factory shells. It was already soaked. He shook it off and aimed obliquely across the mesa toward the 11, pulled the trigger. It fired. It still worked fine. He fired 4 more spaced shots at the 12, the 1, the 2, the 3. Fan fire. A gamble. The upside was he might get lucky and hit the woman. Downside was it would tell her he was on his own. One guy, more than one rifle. That was now an easy deduction. And it would tell her where he was. If she was counting, it would suggest to her he was waiting there with the last 2 shells still in the magazine. So he slid the gun under the Jeep and waded west through the brush until he was 40 feet from the edge of the rock, pulled Alice's Heckler and Koch out of his pocket and knocked the safety off, knelt down and smeared mud over his hands and arms and face, and waited for lightning to strike. Summer storms he had witnessed before in hot parts of the world always featured lightning. Gigantic thunderheads rubbed and jostled overhead and the voltage built to an unbearable level. 5 more minutes, he guessed. Then lightning would fire in bolts or sheets, and the landscape would flash with brightness. He was in khaki clothes and had smeared khaki mud on his skin. He doubted that she had.